Blog Talk Radio.
On a gorgeous Sunday in the Northeast, let's kick off another episode of When Black Men Talk. You know, we're into our summer groove, doing a show once every 2 weeks, twice a month for the summer. And I want to thank you all for basically riding along with us throughout many cities in the U.S. and foreign countries. You guys have been hanging tough and following the show, and it's like, wow. I want to give some gratitude out for that, because that doesn't have to happen. You guys, I'm sure you have many other things to do throughout the summer, but find a way to allow us to come in and enjoy with you. Appreciate that a lot. I want to give a little time to the history of the name When Black Men Talk, because when I decided to go this way and do this show after conferring with Mr. D. Maurice, you know, trying to put a name together, this is what came to me, When Black Men Talk. I remember it was a buddy of mine in St. Louis, and when I was on Facebook kind of talking about it one day, he said, man, I don't know if you want to use that. He said, you may want to, you know, it might scare people off. And I'm like, you know, realistically, if that does, then so what? Because for me, when the word black is out there, it shouldn't scare you. It should actually attract you. So some could think that because we say when black men talk, that we're trying to basically separate ourselves from men. You can think that if you want, but in reality, we're not. Because we all experience the same thing, no matter what color we are as men. And if you kind of give us an opportunity, give us a listen, you realize we're talking about love, relationships, and different factors of life that maybe just might be in your backyard. And if you don't give us that opportunity, I guess that's cool too. But my purpose and my thing in life is never to water down the fact that I'm a black man. I stand up to that. And again, I want to thank you all for giving us a listen, giving us an opportunity to ride with you all throughout the summer. But I don't do this alone. I'm Mark Elliott, and I have two other cats that hang out with me. They've been hanging out for a good period of time, bringing it strong and being the fabric of what we do. One, Mr. DeMaurice and Mr. Charles. Mr. Charles, how you feeling, sir?
Doing well, brother. Doing well. Yourself?
Oh, man, always good. Always good. Mr. DeMaurice, what's good?
Hey, man, hanging in there. Hanging in there, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem, man. You know, we've been getting together once every 2 weeks. You know, I can check in to make sure you two cats are good and anything that's popped off in the 2 weeks that we may want to talk about. Mr. Charles, I come back to you, man. Since the last time we got together and yapped it up, anything good been happening?
Yeah, I mean, life is good, man. I just keep moving forward, trying to get some things accomplished project-wise. But what I'm really blown away by, and as you move forward in this journey for myself anyway, is how quick and how precious time is, man. You know, there's a time I sit back and think about doing things or things I needed to do, and it would I could just be take my time, and it would just seem like it lasted forever. Now those moments go quick, bro. And before you know it, it'll pass you by. So you're either going to be with it on the same level, you're going to be ahead of the game, or you're definitely going to fall back. It depends on where you want to be.
I hear you, man. It's funny. For me, I realize for some reason, the older I get, I still have that urgency, but it's a more relaxed urgency. It's like, I'm going to get done. You know, what are you rushing for? It's going to get done, but I hear you with that. Mr. DeMaurice, man, it's been 2 weeks since we had a chance to talk it up a bit, man. What's been good, boss?
Hey, man, still living, still breathing, still striving to be better every day. And that's good enough for me, man. Just living life and looking forward to bigger and greater opportunities.
There it is. There it is. You know, it's interesting because we're all at a certain age in life. I'm looking at 61, about 4 months. And you would think at that point we would kind of be winding down and kind of looking for the rocking chair and say we're going to cool it out for a bit. That's not even the case, man. I listen to you two talking, what I feel within myself. We ain't thinking about putting the brakes on at all or anything. We're hitting the accelerator just a little bit. Good stuff there, gentlemen. Good stuff. Today I want to move us in the direction of regrets. You know, that's something that it's hard to not have living a life. I know I always said to myself, I want to live my life with the least amount of regrets as possible. That's always kind of been a thing for me. Regrets can lead to you feeling sad. You know, you're going over your disappointments for some things that just didn't happen, missed opportunities. And sometimes, you know, we spend time in relationships and we move out of the relationships, we kind of regret the fact that we were there in the first place. So that plays part of regrets as well. But one thing I realized too, man, with regrets, I think we got to keep in the forefront of our mind is that they lead into remorse. And remorse is one of those things that if you kind of really bake on it, what happened in the past and stuff of that nature, it can have an impact on your current day life as you move forward through life. And that's something you have to keep in mind because it can be dragging you down in your everyday life, but you're not even aware of it. With that being said, I go to counteractual thinking. And that's basically spending mental time on things that didn't happen. What if, only if, you go back and forth, you do all that, and you play that around in your head, and you kind of get lost there. And here again, that can have an impact on what you're doing currently. So I'm going to roll to you with this, Mr. DeMaurice. How are you when it comes to counterfactual thinking, sir?
Oh, man, I gotta fight that constantly, man, because I'm sort of kind of a perfectionist. I like to get things perfect and the way I want them. And you realize in life that that doesn't really happen. Everything is not going to be exactly the way you want them. So, I got to constantly fight that urge to be perfect all the time or do things perfectly or looking at myself as maybe being perfect or doing everything exactly the way it's supposed to be. So it's a constant battle for me. I know that I got to get those negative thoughts out of my head that it should be this way and it's not this way. And I've gotten better over the years on it just with the simple, I guess you can call it a mantra. It's, it is what it is and keep on moving because, I don't even know who came up with that expression, but it's a profound expression that you have to use. To kind of fight off that kind of negative thought that comes in your mind of trying to be perfect and doing things perfectly and everything coming out exactly the way you want it.
You're right about whoever came up with that thought, man. I know I personally owe them some money, man, because I've used that numerous times to basically level things out to where it really kind of grounds you. Once you tell yourself that it is what it is, what more you need to know, man? What really, at that point, you kind of throw your hands up, maybe go grab a Corona or something like that, because ain't no more need to be said, any more need to be done. Mr. Charles, see, when you think of counteractual thinking, here again, it's that mental time we spend, you know, pounding inside of our brain and wondering, well, what if I would have done this, only if this would have happened? And that can apply to a lot of different areas in our life when we think about it. Again, relationships, you know, choices we might have made in our careers. I mean, could have been having kids, maybe not having kids. It go into a lot of different things. So how do you let that play with you, sir?
Yeah, man. A long, long time ago, things used to overtake me mentally, and it could engulf me. And I could be in a state where, man, it's just so frustrating, didn't know what to do. But I learned a long time ago that that's a regular occurrence, as DeMaurice mentioned for me, and it's always coming. So I got to keep it in perspective. I was like, yeah, I can't change that. So I had to put it in its place because otherwise I definitely would have been overwhelmed. I never would have progressed. But having dealt with so many things, crazy things in life and so many disappointments, whatever it may be in life, I had to put it in this perspective, and I have done that. So I constantly remind myself, like, as you mentioned that phrase, it is what it is. I can show you a picture right now. I have a picture of a sign, bro, that's in my office room sitting there right now. And it says, it is what it is, bro. That's mm-hmm. a constant reminder every day.
I'm
literally on my wall because it's like, hey, there's only so much you can do. Now, I do spew in certain things for a while. But then I remind myself, you got to let it go because you can't change it. And to continue on waiting and trying to act as if it's going to be different, even though it may have hurt you at some point, Got to keep rocking, baby, because that's what we do. We have no other choice. We got to keep moving.
Yeah. As I was listening to you, I thought back to my my grandma Rosalie and my mother Sally Mae. And it's amazing when I think about this. I would have thought this would have came from my father, but it came from these two women basically telling me when I was young, Mr. Mark, my grandmother would say, Mr. Mark, why worry about something you can't do nothing about? Why think about something if you can't do nothing about? If you can't do nothing about, why are you spending time on it? And to me, that lies right in line with the counteractual thinking, because why am I going back and looking at the highlights and trying to realize, and I can go back and learn from it and pull that out of it, but to go back and replay and wonder what if and blah, 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 I'm doing my mind a disservice. So, yeah, man, that is like as much as I can, quickly as I can, those things start to happen, I move to stop it because I don't want to live in that mindset, that mental scope of, yeah, what if that, what if, mm-mm. You know, I look at it, any particular situation that I'm in, I try to do the best I can in that particular moment. If I fail, learn from it, keep it moving. But for the most part, I'm going to try to apply myself as fully as I can. If I miss the mark, oh, well, I'll do better next time. But I'm not going to go back and kick myself in the ass for something that I probably could have done or should have done. In reality, we got to keep this in mind, too, because believe it or not, this kind of thinking can lead to anxiety, the constant overthinking. So sometimes when things are approached to you, you're doing so much overthinking over the past, what might have went wrong, you're afraid now to deal with what's in front of you because you're thinking that's a possibility, you know, things aren't going to go right. I want to come back to you with this, Mr. Jarl, because I said earlier, because I've always had the mindset I want to live a life with the least amount of regrets. I know it's going to have some. I gave room for some, but I kind of wanted to make decisions and look at things. So I said, am I going to look back later and regret doing this? With that being said, man, you know, I said earlier we're at a certain point in life now, and I know, I think for us, we might have felt a certain way about regrets when we were younger. Now that we're older, it probably has been modified some over the years. So if we go back and look, Mr. Charles, how did you feel about regrets back then when you were younger compared to at this current state in your life, sir?
Yeah, I think back then, the regrets, I used to always sometimes look at it and go, man, you should have done that, man. You should have done that. And I was like, man, if you had done this, guess where we'd be at right now? And I used to kind of beat myself up about that and be more concerned with it. And then as I got older and matured and grew as a person, then I said to myself, hey, you can say that and you can say, I would have been here, I would have been there. But then I realized that where I'm at right now is not really bad. I mean, you come a long way. So if you really want to continue to move forward and advance, you can do something about it. Or you can stay in your current position. So the point was reminding myself that I had options and where I was at right now wasn't so bad. But just understanding that, hey, we can do something about it now or we can just stay cool. So whatever it is, don't beat yourself up too much because it's your choice. You do have options.
Absolutely. Mr. DeMaurice, you know, you were saying earlier, you know, sometimes you've been hard on yourself in the past. How have you basically evolved from that to not being as hard on yourself in current day time based on regret?
I think you realize over time that everything that happens in your past and the experiences you have help shape you for today. And you really can't linger on the past too much. But when you really kind of focus on the present and who you are today, all those things, whether they were good or bad, negative or positive, had an impact on making you a better person today. So you got a choice to make. Is it going to make you a negative person, or are you going to be, take those experiences and make the absolute worst out of them, or are you going to take those experiences and make the best out of them? And sometimes you realize also that those experiences you do have weren't just for you, make you a better person, but to shed some light and insight on somebody else that might be going through the same thing and helping them learn lessons that you already went through, but helping them kind of be better without going through all the experiences you've gone through. So sometimes it's not about you. It's about the people around you and what you can teach and how you can help guide somebody else that might have been in the same situation you've been or felt something that you felt or have gone through something that you've gone through to help lead them to the path where they can use that to be a better person moving forward.
I want to look back at some of our past relationships, and I know I spoke of earlier, they can play a part of some of our regrets. And the key thing here is that looking at that, did it play a part in the next relationship or the relationships that follow? The regrets that we may have had from the previous relationship, did we take some of those and carry those in the back pocket to our next relationship? Did you ever find yourself maybe doing that, or were you aware and thinking, no, I can't do such?
I like to think that I would, like I said, learn from the past and go, okay, you know, that approach didn't work, this didn't work, and hopefully become much better in future relationships or present relationships than in the past. Because I think you in life, if you don't go around kind of observing yourself and observing what you have learned and learned from those experiences, you're basically spinning your wheels. So to avoid making the same mistakes over and over again, to avoid landing in certain situations that you've been in before that you did not like, that wasn't pleasant for you in those relationships, I like to think that, you know, for me, I like to take a self-reflection or a self-evaluation and go, okay, what didn't work, what was your part in it, things of that sort, a checklist, and then be a better person for that person moving forward instead of, you know, just kind of, you know, staying the same way, like, you know, just being stubborn, like, well, I'm going to do it this way, that day. And I think there are some times when you do that because, you know, you're you. There are things that work for you, the things that you are, the things, you know, you who you are. But to not make improvement and not see, make a self-evaluation and see some of the things that you may have kind of, you know, added to or put in situations that haven't been good. I think, you know, I think Muhammad Ali had this famous quote that, you know, if you're looking at life in your 50s as you did when you're 25, you haven't grown much. And I kind of misquoted in some way, but it's kind of like you have to kind of you have to progress in life. You have to learn some lessons in life. You have to gain some wisdom in life. And if you don't use that, then you pretty much wasted a lot of time. And so I try not to waste a lot of time making mistakes over and over again, but to perfect who I am, to be better every day. And if that takes learning from the lessons from the past, then you got to do that. You got to do that. And I think that, you know, I don't want to put it out on anybody else to do the same thing I'm doing, but I tend to try to look at myself and go, okay, what am I doing wrong? How can I improve? How can I be a better person? How can I learn from this? And I think that's the natural progression of being a man, to be honest with you.
No, you're right, man. You're dead right. But I want to come back to you because in reality, you and I were the ultimate relationship at some point of our lives. When I say ultimate, I mean, there's relationships and then there's a relationship. And the relationship is when a man decides to put on a monkey suit and stand up there in front of everyone. And, of course, stand in front of God and take a woman on to be his wife. And you and I, looking back, done that at one time. That's what I call the ultimate relationship. And we go into it, you know, I'm sure when I say we, I can kind of speak for men in general that have stepped to it. You go into that believing things are going to be a certain way. You believe you're prepared. You want to do things. You want to progress. You want to have things grow. You want things to flourish. And when it doesn't happen and it ends in divorce, you know, you look back at that day and you realize some of those things that you thought of, some of those things that you were feeling, some of those things that brought you to that day may not have manifested. It may not have happened. Now, with that being said, it leaves you, it can leave you with some regrets, some leftover feelings, some leftover things, that, you know, we really need to kind of harness as men and move forward. So I'll come back to you, you know, I just use that one relationship as a what's her name? Was there something that from there that when you realized you had to move into, when you're going to move into another relationship, that you had to kind of basically say to yourself, yeah, that might be a regret, but I can't take that from here and move it over there. Was there anything or things that you can recount or remember, sir?
Yeah, yeah. The first thing that comes to mind is the power of the word no. And if things don't feel right, if things don't feel, if things aren't really kind of set in a way where both parties understand what's going on and how to move forward, if you have any inkling that something's not right, don't move forward. I think about a horse. Sometimes the rider is riding on the horse, but the horse can see certain things and feel certain things that the rider can't see, and the horse will just stop. And nothing you can do to make that horse move forward. And it's the stubbornness of the horse, but the horse knows that if I move forward, there can be some dangerous things or things that aren't good for me. And so I think what I've learned is that over the years, if I don't feel right about something, or if I don't feel that this is going to, whatever relationship I'm in, it's going to be fruitful. I'm very honest about saying no. This is not the way I want this to go, or this is not comfortable for me, and I'm not going to move forward with this. And to be more stern and honest with that, because thinking back in the past relationship I had, the ultimate relationship you talked about, I agreed to a lot of things that I know if I was in my right mind, I wouldn't have done. And if I was, if I really looked at the things around me, I would have been like that horse and go, you know what, we're going to stop right here. I'm not moving forward. But yeah, that's one of the biggest things that I learned, that if you're not comfortable, the importance of that word no, saying no, I'm not going to do that. No, this is not going to happen. Instead of going, yeah, well, okay, you know, whatever you want to do. No, this is what I'm standing on right now. Until I see evidence that's going to be better.
I'll be damned, man. You took mine, but no, you're right, because as men, man, we and I'm just not only as men as human beings. God has blessed us with a serious intuition. And, you know, you feel that. And as I listen to you, I relate to it in a sense. And you don't have to be, as a man, be married to understand this or relate to this. But you're right. When a man takes on the woman to be his wife, he wants to be adaptable. He wants to be flexible. He wants to be all that. And there comes time within that, doing all that, you feel you're led to do something, or you're asked, or you're pulled to do something, and your initial action in your initial gut says, no, this is not right. But at the same time, or you don't feel good about it, but at the same time, you have to make a decision, because you want to be pleasing to her and what's going on. Are you going to be respectful and honest to what you're feeling, your instincts are telling you? And that is a conflict for a man, any relationship, but I would say in the ultimate relationship, that's definitely a conflict. And you're right, when that doesn't feel right and you know it, you're more honest to it. In reality, look at that, and I'm going to take that a little further where I come to you, Mr. Charles, sorry if I'm taking a little long time, but I'm going to say that's why I think there's a lot of men that are not married today. Because they don't, not that they don't like the idea of marriage and all that stuff, but they're not feeling it when they come across these individuals to say, you know what, I'm just going to color the rest of that in and go on and do it. because they're not feeling it. They're not feeling it inside. They don't fully feel it, and they're staying true to what they feel. Mr. Charles, here goes, boss. You know, in some past relationships, we've had regrets, and sometimes those regrets kind of bleed over into the future. If you give thought to it, man, well, there's some regrets that you had to kind of really understand and modify, make sure you, you know, kind of harness them in the relationships that came beyond those. I mean, that particular one, maybe.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, because you love who you love, and you're with who you think you're going to be with for a while, and it's going to work, right? But I think about something today, literally, because of this topic about the relationship. I'm like, man, that was the one. That should have been it. Everything was going to work well. But something kind of happened, and I had to really be honest with myself, and I had to pull back. I was like, it sounded great with being roses and kids and all that stuff. But I'm like, man, but there's a couple stickler points that we could never get past. And I knew that in my heart. I'm like, as much as I wanted it, I couldn't do it. So I couldn't carry it through to another relationship. The fact of being more determined to remind myself of that. Certain things happen, like DeMarie said, I'm like, about that horse, I'm like, no, we ain't doing that. We ain't doing that. I mean, as much as I love you, care for you, hell no, I ain't doing that. Because when I did it before, it caused me problems. I was like, why the hell would you? It's like one of those things that if you guys are married, if you are dealing with the finances, right, and you're the finance person for the family, whatever, and you clearly are the person that should be handling the finances, because that's not that other person's strong point. But, yeah, you give a hand over the finances to the person, and y'all in all kind of financial disarray for so many years because you didn't stand up and do what the hell you wanted to do because you wanted to please somebody. Anyway, I'm going to get off of that. I can run that for a long time, but that's what I'm talking about.
That's a good one, man. You didn't have to get on so quickly, man. But that was a good one. No, realistically, man, I think it's interesting because, again, it puts men in a conflict, a man in a conflict, because, you know, we're men for a reason. We are. You know, we're designed who we are to be, and we are what we are. And sometimes if we go against the grain with that, that's what happens. Just like you said, Mr. Charles, you relinquish that to someone you know, because, you know, you're going to go because you're trying for other reasons to kind of, okay, be applicable. But you know in your heart of hearts that's not correct, that's not right. And sometimes we just have to stand up and be men. You just have to be, man. And everybody ain't going to like it. A lot of people ain't going to like it, you know, and who cares? It goes back to that saying, it is what it is. But damn it, sometimes a man just has to be a man. And if a person really can respect and honor a man, they'll see it for what it is. I'm coming back to you with this, Mr. Charles, because what regrets, you know, the disappointments, of course, feeling sad, missed opportunities, those things, to me, that leads us to find a way to forgive ourselves. And that's something I think that's imperative upon us, because no one's going to live a life without mistakes, without regrets, without being disappointed. I mean, be disappointed or realizing I could have done something different. I know this goes back to, in a sense, the counterfactual thinking, but to me, it's one thing to say, I forgive myself, and then it's another thing to actually do it. You can speak it all day, but are you actually really doing it? Because you can say it in one sentence, then go on and start another conversation, and your conversation shows you haven't forgiven yourself. So there goes the question, in a sense, or there lies the question, in a sense. When it comes to forgiving yourself, how are you in terms of that?
Wow, I thought I was doing well till I started writing this book. Then the reality started coming out. Like, oh my God! And finally, as I finally worked on trying to put the finishing touches on this book, it started coming to me as to why I was acting a certain kind of way or doing certain things. I'm like, you got to be honest. You got to forgive yourself. And I'm getting better. I'm a lot better. And I also realized certain things, like I said in weeks before, you know, having to deal with things so quickly and so hard in life early, I had to become more of an adult. And as I get older, I realized that my inner child was sitting there waiting, going, hey, you have bypassed us for so many years because you always had to do the grown-up thing. And my inner child comes back from time to time, and it's like, I want to play because you took 8 years of the time I'm supposed to have my time. And now I want to come back and get some of that time back. And I literally had to tell myself, you got to put little Charles down, bro, because he is out here raising hell. Like, I just don't give a damn sometimes. Because not that I'm being mean, but it's like, man, I've been through hell in a handbasket. Let's have some fun. And little Charles always reminds me of that. So anyway, grown-up Charles is in charge right at this point. But little Charles, always knocking on the damn door. So I had to forgive myself and understand that that's part of my life, and it's still okay to be who I am.
Ladies and gentlemen, I love what we do here with our honesty, our self-honesty, our self-reflection, not afraid to look in the mirror and speak on it. And that's what a real man should be doing. And that's what us three do. We put all that together and we call it When Black Men Talk. And that's why we don't walk away from the word black at all. Because I don't care what color you are, if you can't identify with that, then check your real man meter. Mr. DeMaurice, how are you when it comes to forgiving yourself, sir?
I've gotten better over the years, and I always remember that the Creator, when you ask the Creator for forgiveness, he or she blots it out their mind. They don't remember it. And I have to always remember, if I forgive myself and the Creator forgives me, then why should I be holding on to it? If the Creator forgets it and puts out I'm the only one holding myself back with those thoughts of forgiving myself. So if I ask for forgiveness, I let it go. And over the years, it's become better and better and better, because when those thoughts kind of seep in, and they do from time to time, the first thought I come up with is, if the Creator forgets it, then why are you remembering it and reliving it and trying to and not forgiving yourself? So if the higher being, the higher power is forgiving you, then why are you holding yourself back with this this unforgiveness and these thoughts and within the past, and the past, and nothing you can do about it now? You've asked for forgiveness. You have made amends and did all you could do. Why are you remembering this stuff, and why are you putting it in your mind when the Creator has put it out their mind or their space and cleared you of it? So that's what I have to constantly put in my mind when those thoughts of forgiving myself come up, that, let it go, because it's no longer there. It's gone. Now, people want to hold on to it. You want to hold on to it. That's the personal decision you make. And that's putting yourself in jail, so to speak. Your mind in jail, your prisoner in jail, overthinking things. But if the Creator blotted it out of their mind, then why are you holding on to it?
That's good stuff right there, man. I think it's hard for some of us to actually forgive ourselves because of the embarrassment, the shame, all that's tied to it. But you're dead on. God forgives you. You forgive. It should make it easier for you to forgive yourself. And realistically, part of forgiving yourself too, like you pointed out, can't be concerned what other people are thinking. You really can't spend time and mentally think about what they're thinking. And reality, being honest with yourself, taking on it, taking all the accountability of a particular situation and seeing, what you could have done better, and then letting it go, giving it to God and letting it go. And the more you do it, the easier it becomes, realistically. It may not sound as simple as that, but it is. The more you practice it, like anything else, the easier and more natural it will become. And you'll find over time, you'll find less things you're doing to actually have to give yourself for. It's amazing how it works. And this may sound crazy, but I will say this, man. Some of the things that we have given ourselves for, too, to make it even lighter in our minds, you have to learn to laugh at it. Some things you got to learn just to laugh at and just find humor in it. That may sound crazy, but yeah, some things you just have to find a little humor to kind of lighten it and allow it to basically take its natural place. Now, I want to kind of round it out with this question, Mr. DeMaurice, before we kind of move on, but it's interesting because, you know, we forgive ourselves and we're supposed to forgive others, but can you forgive someone that maybe offended you without them apologizing to you?
Yes, you can, because it's your decision to let it go and to move on. If you, because I've read this and I've really experienced this, is that forgiveness is about you. It ain't about the other person. It's about you.
True.
If you want to lock yourself up in that prison and you know, grumbling every time you see that person, you know, you're letting something go. Now, if that person wants to hold on to it, that's fine, you know, because it's not about you. I mean, it is about you. The forgiveness is about you. But what the other person decides to do with the situation is on them. So, yeah, it is possible where you could say, you know, I forgive them. You know, I'm moving on, and I always say, you know, I forget, but I'm not going to forget. I'm not going to forget the experience, and I'm not going to be taking or take any wooden nickels from this person ever again. But it is possible that you can forgive, and, you know, and the other person, you know, is holding on to it. But, yeah, I think it's very possible, and I think people should do that because it's more about you than the other person.
Absolutely, man. I don't know who came up with that line of thought of wooden niggles, man. That I never understand. That always makes me stop.
Oh, my pop.
He
says that every time we part. Like, don't take no wooden nickels. And it's actually a history behind that because the Native Americans were given like these wooden nickels as currency. And they weren't worth anything. So, yeah, it is a history behind that, yeah.
Wow, because, yeah, I'm saying to myself, when have I ever seen a wooden nickel? But, no, thanks for filling it in, man, because I've heard that over the years. But it's like, if you put a wooden nickel in my hand, I'm going to give it back to you real quick. Mr. Charles, is it possible to really forgive someone without them coming to you and apologizing?
Yes, I think it is possible. Sometimes it can be difficult because depending on what the person did, you can be like, man, they need to apologize to me. And that's the younger person in me speaking. The older person is like, okay, we already know. But I think part of it is, as DeMaurice mentioned, you can forgive, but you won't forget. But I think for me, I know one particular instance with a relative really was crazy. I was like, man, we never were going to get right. But then I had to remind myself, though, I want to forgive them, but I didn't forget. But the other part of it was the relationship was never the same ever again. It never will be. Just from the standpoint of, as DeMaurice mentioned about the wooden nickels, and you're not going to let the person dupe you anymore. And then you got to realize, I realized who I am and the strength of who I am and what it was about and whatnot. I'm like, why are you even entertaining this? You're the stronger person. You always have been. You don't have to deal with this. They need you. You don't need them. And once I put that in perspective, we keep it pushing. I entertain them. Excuse me. I'm cordial. But, nah, we ain't never be like we were.
Yeah. It's interesting that your father said to you, Mr. DeMaurice, and I believe, to answer the question, initially, yeah, you should. Because, like you said, it's more for you than them. And some people are never going to apologize. They're never going to own up to whatever they did, take accountability for it. And they know they should, but they'll just fight not to because of their stubbornness and their pride. So don't sit around waiting for anyone to apologize to you. You're just going to be waiting and damaging yourself. But something I remember with this is that, as you said, you don't forget. Again, going back to what I was told a while ago by my mother, you feed some people with a longer or shorter spoon. And the person that you kind of really are endeared to, they get the shortest phone. But the person that you really don't really want to kind of associate with, you can feed them. But this spoon is much longer. You keep them at a distance. And that's how, in a way, you may not be forgetting, But if you're still going to be associated, they don't get the same length of schooling anymore. They just don't, because they've shown you who they are and what they're capable of. And you should not allow them to continually, consistently devalue you. Mr. Charleston, comes to you for the question of the week, sir.
Yeah. I've been thinking about this for a minute, but I guess I wanted to really throw it after you. I wanted to get your guys' thought. It may not be a big deal to you, but I really dove into it a little bit. The situation with former football player Michael Orr and the Tuani family, about him now coming back saying that they kind of duped him as to what he thought was going to happen in regards to the difference between being adopted and them actually connecting with the conservatorship of him in this situation.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this up, man, because when it came out, I kind of looked at it, and I'm tossing around a little bit, and I kind of want to wait till more happens to hear more, because I'm hearing kind of what I believe is most sides. But before I really take a harsh stand, I want to kind of wait more, but I'll say this initially. I will say this. I'm hoping that they did right by him, adopted or not, but it's a part of me that just cannot overlook the mere fact that this young man was 16, 17 years old, and they might have done some things, bro, but they brought you in, and from what I can see, from that point on, your life was enhanced. Was enhanced, greatly enhanced. So I don't know, all the particulars, so I kind of leave it there. But to me, sometimes we get things and we benefit from it, and everything, sometimes things are done aren't pretty. They're not. So I kind of hear more, because to me, this brother has benefited greatly from it. Now that you're not playing football, you go back and, again, regress. You go back and you look back and you start pointing fingers. That could be it and it could not be. So as more come out, I can answer that a little strongly, but that's why I am with that now. Your response, Mr. DeVernis.
Yeah, I'm sort of in the same space. I like to – I know when these stories come out, it's kind of sensationalized and it kind of sways you in a certain direction. And I want to wait. But there seems to be a pattern here, because I was reading another story about this couple who – at least the wife who took a opportunity to engage these two young African-American males at a restaurant or something like that, KFC or something like that. And I was reading the story where it was a photo op for her to kind of put her in a good light on her social media account. And the two young men were like, we didn't need any money to go to a game, and we didn't need any cab fare because we were going to a high school right up the street to watch a basketball game. I think they were both players or something like that. And we stopped at KFC to kind of charge my phone. So the way she was making it out to be, like she was engaging these two young black men and doing her, good service that day, or her, good deed of the day. So it wasn't like that at all. So, when I hear stories like that, I want to kind of go, did they take the opportunity to kind of know what this young man was, his potential was, and took advantage of that? Is this a pattern for them? So the jury's still out on them and how they worked the finances and how they did the quote-unquote adoption and how they flipped that a little bit. But I want to kind of wait a little bit while long on it. I don't like to jump on a bandwagon where people are making comments about things and we don't know the full story, or the court case hasn't come out yet to see what the evidence and what's what. But it looks really bad that a whole movie was made out of it, and they have these movies based on a true story, and it turns out it's not that way. But I will say to people who are asking for the actress, I guess, who got an Academy Award for the movie, they want her to give the award back. Come on, stop doing that. Stop doing that. She's an actress. She was just playing a role. She had nothing to do
Well, yeah, she had nothing to do with all that stuff in the behind the scenes. You know, leave her alone. Leave her alone. get the award back. Like, come on, stop. It's like, she's supposed to go in. I mean, folks are just going too far with this stuff. But, you know, she had nothing to do with that. She was playing a role. Let her keep the, you know, Academy Award or Oscar, whatever she got. You know, leave that alone. You know, this is about the true life story of these families and how this guy may or may not have been manipulated. That's all I got.
Yeah, I'm with you with that. Sometimes we go too far with our revenge, man, our emotions, and it's like,
tear everything down. Tear the foundation, everything.
It's like,
tear the roof off this sucker, man.
Yeah, man. I'm like, come on.
She didn't make up the story. Like you said, she didn't
Yeah, she didn't
make
the story. Yeah.
Yes. Damn.
Good question, Mr. Charles, man. No, bro, good question, but we're waiting patiently to hear your response.
Yeah, I started diving into it because I wanted to know a little bit more, and like I said, we still have to find out more things, but certain actions kind of showed to me how things are happening. First of all, I think I understand about them taking him on and changing his life, and that's great, but I think part of that comes to becoming honest. You know, I didn't need some honesty there. You got to think about it. That movie made $300 million, bro. $300 million from 2009. $300 million. And the family said they gave him some money, and he's trying to shake them down now. But the key point for me is right now, is the fact that I guess at 18, they tried to adopt him, right? And he thought he was adopted or going to be adopted. But in actuality, the family found out that they could not adopt him after 18, so they went into a conservatorship. And when you go into a conservatorship, that means that a person doesn't have the capacity to make any of their own decisions. So you control usually their medical and their financial. So with that being said, you know, financial and health decisions. And with that being said, he couldn't make any of his own deals or anything like that. But the other part that's very key is, with that being said, they could have done something very similar instead of conservatorship, where he could have had some of his own rights. They literally could have used the power of attorney and uh-huh. oversaw what he was doing, and he still would have had his rights, but they didn't do that. And last but not least on this point, with that being said, now all of a sudden they come back, and now they're saying, we're going to, because the lawyer told us to do this, we're not going to rescind those rights to the conservatorship. Don't do me no damn favors. I feel you, but... Just be at some point. Where was the honesty in this? I know they helped change the life, but dude, it's like what's that old my one of the movies I saw was like, you see what I did for you? But hell, you took all my money.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I'm gonna leave that right there, bro.
It's gonna get interesting, man. It really is. From time to time, this is gonna be interesting, and we'll revisit it. Declare it become. We'll revisit it and go back and go through it with a fine tooth comb. Your question, Mr. D. Maurice?
I wanted to get you guys' take on the Alabama brawl. We didn't get to talk about that last time. We ain't talk about wrestling either. We talk about the Alabama brawl.
Man, I it's funny because I know you sent out a text before I saw the video. And I, you know, had no content to go by. You sent out a text about it. But when I saw the video, a guy was commentating in a comedy sense. And I'm going to tell you, man, that brother that swam the water, when I saw that, I could not stop. When he was commentating, I couldn't stop. Because that cat, he was beating that water down. But when I took all that away from me, historically, man, I don't think that could happen in a better place other than Alabama. And I think those people that were sent, the others that came and how that sent it, that is a lot of history reverting itself, bro. It is. And it's like, I'm sure, you know, those gentlemen that attacked the first guy, they didn't realize the avalanche that was coming. And what America doesn't realize is that as black people, we walk around with a bunch of kick-ass every day for what happened in the past. We may not exert it, but if you give us the opportunity, it's coming. And I came across of, you know, I think I sent it to you, Mr. Demir, so I'm a thing. I came across a something Malcolm X said years ago.
Yeah.
And I'm paraphrasing. Yeah, yeah. I said this. Yeah. But he said, it's going to come a time when you assault one black man, woman, you're assaulting us all, and that's how we're going to respond to it. And to me, that wasn't, if that wasn't on display right there, rise up, and that day will come. I mean, that man spoke it from the grave, Ross. And I'm leave that right there. All yours, Mr. Charles.
Yeah, I found that quite interesting because a lot of people, when they're looking at, depending on what side you're, I tried to be more objective after I calmed down and saw what happened. The fact that you mentioned earlier, that the reason why I started from the beginning is because these people did not want to comply with the man that was in charge of the situation, was trying to, you know, get it all together. And they started beating him down. Then talking about the brother. And then they reacted, the other folks did. And then all of a sudden, just because hell in a handbasket came from the water, you know this is serious. Because a lot of people swear that African-Americans don't swim. Okay, that brother said, see, watch this. I got this guy popping out. He swam across the water, got out the water. You know how hard it is to swim? He swam, got out the water and started throwing, bro. He had so much energy. And then after that, it just all became into a melee. It was like, watch him wrestling. And the man took the kid. Bang! I was like, that's cool, bro. Like, what was that? I said, damn. Is that how you said that, Calhoun? If I said, hey, money, hey, big money, hey, Jay. That boy was here on the street. I was like, damn. I said, oh, my God. What the hell? I'm like, what the movie? I said, what? Now I'm just saying you want to cry. Because then it came to the, you know, like we did. And we've been waiting a long time to work the ass, but, you know, we try to do a lot. We try to follow the rules. A lot of us been disappointed. People been taking advantage of us. And we try to follow the rules and follow the law. But when you open the door like that and you still going to tell us we ain't no good and you still try to run that old game, those people down there was like, not today. Baby. Women was getting knocked out. You gonna try to get up, sit your ass down. Oh my God, we here. Son is here. What's up? Take the nation of millions and hold us back, bro. I'm gonna leave that right there. And I don't. Like, I'm not about the violence, bro. But sometimes, like Andy Griffin told Opie, sometimes you gotta whoop a little ass to keep people in line. Anyway.
Hey, where did they come from, man? Where did they come from? All yours, Dee Maurice. Go, 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 man.
Yeah, I think when I saw it, I thought about Charles, Mr. Charles, like he always been saying during the show, we ain't going back. And I was talking to a buddy of mine maybe a month before, and there was an incident that happened, and there are a lot of videos of quote-unquote Karen getting put in their place. And we were talking about some of those videos. I'm like, I said, this is not the 60s and, you know, where folks are going to be walking around and the police and white folks are going to be, you know, pushing people around and things of that sort. And folks are going to take it. I said, it's not the nonviolent era anymore. I said, this younger generation, I know the generation I'm in and the younger generation, you know, I know my mom told me, like, anybody put their hand on you. You know, you fight back, and you know, end up being meek and all that other stuff. And I said, you're in the era of F around and find out. And after it happened, we all got back together. My buddy and some other folks got back together. It's like, yo, man, you were right. He was like, and they were, and this was a diverse group, you know, of different cultures. He's like, you know, they were glad to see it. There were more white folks that were glad to see that. Then I ran into black folks that was seeing it. You saw all the memes and all that stuff. I think I might have took a Monday and just went through all the memes, some of the money, the memes about the chairs, people selling T-shirts on, you know, August 5th. It's a new national holiday. The historical background of that pier and what that meant. They used to sell slaves on that pier and how it was almost like the ancestors kind of got into those folks. Because I've never seen that before where folks were you usually see the pictures of white folks or the police, you know, brutalizing black folks. You didn't see that there. You saw some of the police just standing around like, okay, until the brother hit the woman with the in the chair sitting down, And then the police were like, okay, we got to jump in and stop this. Because they didn't stop it when there was a sister, I guess, or somebody threw the white lady in the water. They roughed her up and then threw her in the water. They didn't stop it when the white guy jumped into the water. He's like, I'm going to swim under this pier and get out to the water so I ain't taking no more asses. But it was so many events, you know, you had to watch that thing and break it down and we just watch certain people, the brother throwing his hat up. The three or four brothers coming up and skipping. When you see black folks skipping towards the confrontation, nah, man, it ain't gonna end well. It ain't gonna end well. When you see black folks skipping with no shirt on, it's not gonna end well. And so you saw so many things that we have seen over the years in our neighborhood when fights broke out, like, oh, good. Now it's, you know, folks that really kind of deserve to get their comeuppance. So, you know, hopefully, and you see it in Africa, you see it in different countries where black folks are standing up and like, you know what, that's it. We're not being controlled by the colonizers. We're not being controlled by certain things. And if you want to fight, you want this civil war, let's have it.
Yeah. One thing, too, man, about that. I was happy to see, because usually when we're involved, man, weapons come out, and no weapons came out, bro. Other than that, you know, you want to call the chair a weapon. You're right. When that happened, the cops stepped in. But there's something to say, be said about just taking your bare hand and beating someone for something they've done wrong, bro. There's something to be said about it. And I agree with you about the ancestors. I think they played a part in all that, because when you look at that video, there were people that weren't even in the frame of what was going on. Where did they come from? How do they know? I mean, it's like someone sent them. Remember back in the day you had a beeper? And it's like someone had a beeper to them. Someone sent them a beeper, get down to the pier. And they just got down there in no time flat. And it took place. So that's something, again, for me, it has, I mean, Alabama was the right place for it to go down. You know, I'm not a big fan of social media or whatever, but I love the fact that was able to go viral and it spoke. And like you said, you was in mixed company. And if you're just being real, if you take the color out of that and just look at what took place, you realize they got more than what they deserve. Because if you decide four, you're going to jump anybody at once, come on. What comes back to you? You deserve that and more. So, good. Gentlemen, we're going to do a quick 30 seconds and get on out of here. Mr. Charles, you got 30 seconds. I need to rush, my brother. 30 seconds to you. Let's go.
30 seconds. Like I said, just be careful how you talk to people, how you treat people, and what you can expect from people. It's a crazy-ass world out here right now, but people not playing no more, man. People are not playing, so be careful. Enjoy your day, though.
We call this a 30-second end. Mr. D. Maurice, 30 seconds, let's hit it.
Like I mentioned a little while ago, pay attention to what's happening in Africa where they're talking about making a United States of Africa. If that happens, we're going to have to change currencies, everything, because folks have been pulling resources out of Africa for so long that Africans realize that, you know what? We got the resources to run our own continent. What do we need you here for?
There's a young sister in Fulton County, Georgia, a prosecutor. First name is Fanny. If you're not familiar with it, pay attention, you know, research and see what's going on. I mean, come off YouTube, come off TikTok. See what some dynamic people are doing in this world today. Take notice. We'll get together in 2 weeks, gentlemen. In the meantime, be good to yourself. Always be good to others. Stay black. We'll do it again soon. Mr. Charles, Mr. DeMaurice, Mark Elliott, when black men talk.